Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
For decades, a summer camp in the Catskills was marketed as the premier weight loss program for kids in the country. It was also the longest running. Camp Shane, which opened in 1968 in Ferndale, has hosted middle-class kids and kids of celebrities like Steven Tyler and Iman, all with one goal in mind, losing weight. It became so popular that it was featured in documentaries from MTV and the BBC and inspired the 1995 Disney film Heavyweights. The camp, which it relocated in 2019 to Connecticut, finally closed this summer due to poor COVID conditions, accusations of opening without a proper license, and a tragic accident. But even before Camp Shane shut down for good, family drama behind the scenes threatens the program's existence, as did allegations of poor living conditions, problematic dieting policies, and sexual abuse. New reporting in Bloomberg from journalist David Gavi Herbert lays out the story of Camp Shane and the behind-the-scenes feuds within the family who ran it. The piece is titled The Epic Family Feud Behind an Iconic American Weight Loss Camp for Kids. It's out in Bloomberg now. David Gavi Herbert joins us now. Hi, David.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. Hey, listeners, did you attend Camp Shane? What was your experience there? Or maybe you went to a different weight loss camp as a kid. What do you want people to know about your experience? How did your time at weight loss camp affect your self-image? You can call us at 646-435-7280, 646-435-7280. You can always tweet to us at @WNYC, or if you want to share your experience but you prefer to remain anonymous, you can also send us a DM via our Instagram. That is also @WNYC. So, Dave, when was the first time you heard about Camp Shane?
So my best friend growing up actually went to the camp. And we were kids, maybe 10, 11, when he told us where he went every summer. And every fall, we'd see him in the locker room, and he would have lost a ton of weight. And then by Thanksgiving or Christmas, he'd sort of gain it back. And the next summer, he was back at camp again. And he and I were talking last year about his experience there. And I wondered, whatever happened to that camp? It turns out it was still around, and there was a lot more to the story than just an iconic weight loss camp.
When you started to report out this story, approximately how many former campers and counselors did you speak to?
So I talked to about 60 former campers, counselors, people in the industry from across the decades, from people starting in the late 60s all the way up until the summer. And it was difficult to track them down, although many of them are on Facebook. There's a Facebook group for alums of Camp Shane. There's people that have written, you know, blogs about it, tweets about it. So it took a while to track them down. But once people started talking, they kept talking, and they had so much to say about their experience there.
What's the range of memories that campers have?
So it's interesting. There's some people who remember this as the greatest summer of their lives. You know, it was the first time where they felt like they were surrounded by other kids like them. You know, maybe they had their first kiss or first boyfriend or girlfriend. There's kids who had an okay time. In retrospect, they think some of the issues they have with food might stem from the camp itself, which had a very strict caloric intake. And there's a lot of exercise and a lot of sort of emotions around that. And then there are some people who had an absolute nightmarish time for reasons stemming from they just didn't make any friends or, you know, alleged sexual abuse, you know, body image dysmorphia that emerged at that time.
We actually have somebody who went to Camp Shane who's called in already. This is Mark on line one. Hi, Mark. Thank you for calling all of it to share your experience.
Yeah, no, I'm thrilled to be on and thrilled to talk about the camp. I went the summer of 1988, so it was a long time ago, but I remember it extremely well. I did not want to go at all. Made it very clear to my parents, and they sent me anyways in large measure because they wanted me trim and fit for my bar mitzvah. And I wasn't obese, but I definitely needed to lose a few pounds. And it was a horrible, horrible experience. I felt that my parents had ignored my desires, had really sort of thrown me away, felt abandoned at the camp. And when you see a camp like that as a prison, everything like a prison is there. There's a thriving black market for junk food. There's escape attempts. I actually tried to escape a couple of times. And the, you know, the facilities, this is in 88, were lousy. So it was not being particularly well taken care of. It was just an absolutely miserable, miserable summer. And it did, I think, have an impact on me long term. I mean, again, if the worst thing that happens to you in life is you're sent to fat camp, you've had a pretty good life. So I take that everything in context. Mm-hmm. But, you know, when you feel as if you've been thrown away and, you know, you're sort of languishing in this place for a whole summer, it definitely has an impact.
Mark, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your experience. We really appreciate it. If anyone else is listening, we'd love to know if you attended Camp Shane and what your experience was there. Did you go to a weight loss camp as a kid? Maybe it wasn't Camp Shane, but you went to a different one. What was your time like? How did it affect your self-image? Give us a call, 646-435-7280. I'm talking to David Gauvie Herbert, who wrote a piece for Bloomberg called The Epic Family Feud Behind an Iconic American Weight Loss Camp for Kids. Let's dive into the family feud part of it a little bit, and then we'll see how the two intersect, the way the camp was run and the family feud. So it starts with this matriarch, Selma Ettenberg. And Selma, as we learn, is someone who will become estranged from her family. She could be punishing. She could be a difficult person. But she may have been a little bit of a business savant, truly. What do we know about her childhood, her upbringing, and what led to the idea of a weight loss camp for kids?
So Selma Ettenberg is a very complicated figure. I mean, as you say, a business savant. I mean, truly a genius. And if she'd been in a different context, she might have been a, you know, senator or a billionaire. I mean, to be honest, she grew up quite poor in Brooklyn, had a series of different jobs throughout the years. And then, when she was later in life, she was working at an all-girls weight loss camp. And every night she would hear the girls moaning and complaining about boys and gossiping. And she had this brilliant insight that instead of having an all-girls or an all-boys weight loss camp, you could have a co-ed weight loss camp. And that was, for many years, the genius of Camp Shane was you had boys and girls who, you know, in their normal lives maybe weren't used to attention from the opposite sex. They come to the summer camp. Everyone's, you know, losing weight, they're all together, and romance begins to blossom. And so that was sort of what set aside the camp as a sort of unique experiment to begin with. And it sort of it grew exponentially from there.
Culturally, why was something like a weight loss camp of interest in the late 60s and early 70s when it first started?
So when the camp first started, childhood obesity was not a huge issue in the country. Something like maybe 5% of kids were classified as obese. But you were beginning to see sort of an uptick in weight issues with children. You know, you could track it to the diets, changing diets, junk food, soda, whatever you might want to ascribe it to. But you now also had all of these parents who had a lot of money. It's the post-war era, sort of more the beginning of the self-help era. And there was this idea, if, you know, you sent them to this camp, they were guaranteed to lose weight. They really were, because they were on a tight calorie diet, and they were running around in the woods all day. And the average kids lost between 20 and 30 pounds every summer, which is pretty remarkable for a camp that initially was 7 weeks long. So you're talking about losing 5-6 pounds a week.
Let's go to Kat, who is calling in from Brooklyn on line two. Hi, Kat. Thank you for calling all of it to share your family's experience.
Hi, Allison. Great show. My family's experience is that my son attended the camp 3 summers, and the second and third summer, he did lose quite a bit of weight, and he was also, as he shared years later on, he was also stripping his counselor. I don't know if your audience is familiar with the word stripping, but I think you get the drift here.
Yeah.
He's instructed me this morning not to share this information with his fiancée's family, who are from Beverly Hills, and he doesn't really want to share this part of his life. There we go.
That is interesting. Joy, Kat, thank you so much for calling in. So that part of the story we'll get to a little bit later about some of the relationships and not consensual relationships between campers and counselors. I'm still back at the diet program. Was it based in any sort of, you know, professional or medical nutrition? Did it evolve with the times in terms of what we know about better nutrition and how to feed kids properly?
It was based very loosely on a few sort of state health guidelines that had come out in the 1960s in terms of what was a healthy diet regimen. But all you need to know about what they were actually feeding the kids is Selma Ettenberg would go on these sort of barnstorming media tours around the country in the 70s to promote the camp. And her sort of suggested, quote, healthy snack was a piece of white bread, Munster cheese, tomato paste, and salt and pepper. Not exactly anyone's idea of a healthy snack today, but this was the thinking at the time in the 70s. If you limited caloric intake, you could basically eat whatever you wanted. Now we sort of view it differently, and we'd be pushing fruits and vegetables and lean meats and all these things. Over time, the camp did evolve a bit. Different foods were fed to the kids, but the caloric deprivation method never changed. That was always a feature of the camp. And it's sort of over the years, other camps that sprung up and rival camps, they modulated their diets, but Camp Shane never did. Because, it worked in the sense that you lost weight, but it was a yo-yo diet. It was a crash diet. And kids, by Thanksgiving, would have gained it all back.
You know, when you spoke to former campers, did they say they left camp feeling good?
It's interesting. You had a mix of reactions. A lot of people, especially in the 70s and 80s, had a positive experience with the camp. Again, people would have lost weight. You know, maybe they had a bar mitzvah in the fall, or they would have found a new girlfriend at camp. There are stories we heard of kids who, on pickup day, their parents would walk past them because they didn't recognize their child, because their child had lost 35, 40 pounds in 2 months. And then the parents would start weeping and embracing them. And so there was a very positive feeling, for the kids at the end of the summer. But then other campers over time started to think, what did this actually do to me in my relationship with food and how I view myself? And a lot of body issues sort of emerged later in life for some campers.
We've got Joy, who is on line 4, who went to Camp Shane and had a... We lost Joy? Okay. Well, Joy, as she knew, has said she went to Camp Shane and she really loved it. And she came back as a counselor and had very fond memories of the camp. So to your point, you had a range of experiences that people had. My guest is David Gavi. I keep saying your name wrong. I'm so sorry. David Gavi Herbert. The name of his piece is The Epic Family Feud Behind Iconic American Weight Loss Camp for Kids. Okay, I think we've sort of painted the picture of what Camp Shane was like, and with a lot of 2020 hindsight about health and mental health issues. Let's talk a little bit about this family feud. So the camp becomes very successful. Selma's running this business. It's supposed to be a family business. When did the cracks in that facade begin to show themselves?
So Selma at some point begins to enlist her family's help in running the camp. She's a very shrewd operator. She absolutely wants to keep costs and overhead low. And so, of course, having your family come up and paint cabins and, clear out the dining hall every summer is a pretty efficient way to do that. In the early 1980s, she asks, some people say insists, that her son David come upstate, come to Ferndale to help run the camp. And he becomes the camp director and she's the owner, and they're running it together. David is a very shrewd, very smart guy. And over time, they begin to become at loggerheads. Selma can be quite abusive towards her children. She sort of feels like this camp is a symbol of how smart she is, how successful she finally has become. And so her children, alternately, she wants them close and she wants them working on the camp, but also sort of threatened by their own successes. And in the late 1980s, they begin this sort of legal showdown where he gets her to sign a document saying that she'll sell him the camp. And then when it, as the sale date approaches, she has second thoughts. They end up in this drag out, knockdown lawsuit. And that's actually just the beginning of the story. As if you read the article, he buys the camp from her and then war breaks out.
While all of this is going on, this family feud, this war breaks out, there's a cooking of the books, all of this. What's happening at the camp to the campers?
So the campers are, not really aware of what's going on. They understand that maybe there's some tension between Selma and David. The camp itself, sort of the glory days, as I understood it from talking to former campers, was the 70s and 80s. And then this war between Selma and David sort of marks a tipping point where you're now edging into a different type of camp where there's different types of campers arriving. It's no longer sort of chubby Jewish kids from New York and New Jersey. It's kids from larger parts of the country and different types of backgrounds. You also have, changing attitudes towards food in the U.S. And so you have Jane Fonda workouts and NutraSweet and Diet Coke. And so it's a moment where the kids are feeling more pressure than ever to lose weight. There's wealthier kids arriving. And some of the adults at the camp are not necessarily paying attention to what's going on because they're so wrapped up in this fighting between each other.
I've got an anonymous comment that says, I went to Camp Shane, I lost weight, and Selma connected me with Susie Pruden, a New York exercise guru. They got me on Midday Live to promote both their programs. I was 19 and very naive about how they worked out that deal. I would never send any child to a camp so focused on the scale over health. I'm curious, did you talk to any parents who sent their kids?
We did talk to some parents. I was very conscious in reporting the story that I wanted to hear from the kids' mm-hmm. perspectives. I think, you know, the parents had had their moment where they decided to send their kids, and I wanted to hear what the kids had actually thought. But we did talk to some parents, and some parents, you know, if you ask them today, are you regretful that you sent your child to this camp? They'll say, well, we did the best we could, mm-hmm. you know, which is true. They did the best they could. There wasn't as much known about dieting and children's health. There are some parents who are actually quite happy with their decision. And we spoke to one former camper. She's now, I believe, in her 40s. And her mother still has the before and after photos that were taken at the camp. Because on weigh-in day, they would take a photo of you shirtless if you're a boy and in a bathing suit if you were a girl. And then at the end of the summer, they would take one of you again much later, and they'd give them to the parents as sort of proof of concept. And this mother, I believe she's in her 80s maybe, still has these photos in her drawer, which her daughter has mixed feelings about to this day.
I can understand that daughter's feelings. In a nutshell, because I want people to read the article, because it really does go in depth in terms of some of the financial malfeasance and all. Camp Shane relocated to Connecticut. And then it shut down this summer. What happened? Just a nutshell.
Basically, David Ettenberg sold the property upstate. He needed a place to run the camp. And for a couple summers, he was running it out of boarding schools in Connecticut. And this summer, basically, a combination of factors, you know, difficulty recruiting staff, COVID restrictions, and some alleged mismanagement of how the camp was being run, not filing the right paperwork, not having the right oversight of kids. An 8-year-old girl was very, very badly injured, which basically precipitated the closure of the camp. And who knows if the camp is done for good? It seems like it might be, but we'll see. We'll see next summer.
The name of the piece is The Epic Family Feud Behind an Iconic American Weight Loss Camp for Kids. It was written by David Gavi Herbert. David, thank you so much for sharing your reporting. And listeners, thank you so much for sharing your personal experiences. Thanks, David.
Thank you.